What Belongs to You? Written and read by Garth Greenwell. Part 1. Mitko. That my first encounter with Mitko B. ended in a betrayal, even a minor one, should have given me greater warning at the time, which should in turn have made my desire for him less, if not done away with it completely. But warning, in places like the bathrooms at the National Palace of Culture where we met, is like some element coterminous with the air, ubiquitous and inescapable, so that it becomes part of those who inhabit it, and thus part and parcel of the desire that draws us there. Even as I descended the stairs, I heard his voice, which, like the rest of him, was too large for those subterranean rooms, spilling out of them as if to climb back into the bright afternoon that, though it was mid-October, had nothing autumnal about it. The grapes that hung ripe from vines throughout the city burst warm still in one's mouth. I was surprised to hear someone talking so freely in a place where, by unstated code, voices seldom rose above a whisper. At the bottom of the stairs, I paid my 50 stotinki to an old woman who looked up at me from her booth, her expression unreadable as she took the coins. With her other hand, she clutched a shawl against the chill that was constant here, whatever the season. Only as I neared the end of the corridor did I hear a second voice, not raised like the first, but answering in a low murmur. The voices came from the second of the bathroom's three chambers, where they might have belonged to men washing their hands had the sound of water accompanied them. I paused in the outermost room, examining myself in the mirrors lining its walls as I listened to their conversation, though I couldn't understand a word. There was only one reason for men to be standing there. The bathrooms at Indica, as the palace is called, are well enough hidden and have such a reputation that they're hardly used for anything else. And yet, as I turned into the room, this explanation seemed at odds with the demeanor of the man who claimed my attention, which was cordial and brash, entirely public in that place of intense privacies. He was tall, thin but broad-shouldered, with the close-cropped military cut of hair popular among certain young men in Sofia, who affect a hyper-masculine style and an air of criminality. I hardly noticed the man he was with, who was shorter, deferential, with bleached blonde hair and a denim jacket from the pockets of which he never removed his hands. It was the larger man who turned toward me with apparently friendly interest, free of predation or fear, and though I was taken aback, I found myself smiling in response. He greeted me with an elaborate rush of words, at which I could only shake my head in bemusement as I grasped the large hand he held out, offering as broken apology and defense the few phrases I had practiced to numbness. His smile widened when he realized I was a foreigner, revealing a chipped front tooth, the jagged seam of which I would learn he worried obsessively with his index finger in moments of abstraction. Even at arm's length, I could smell the alcohol that emanated not so much from his breath as from his clothes and hair. It explained his freedom in a place that, for all its license, was bound by such an ambition, and explained, too, the peculiarly innocent quality of his gaze, which was intent but unthreatening. He spoke again, cocking his head to one side, and in a pidgin of Bulgarian, English, and German, we established that I was American, that I had been in his city for a few weeks and would stay at least a year, that I was a teacher at the American College, that my name was more or less unpronounceable in his language. Throughout our halting conversation, there was no acknowledgement of the strange location of our encounter or of the uses to which it was almost exclusively put, so that speaking to him I felt an anxiety made up of equal parts desire and unease at the mystery of his presence and purpose. There was a third man there as well, who entered and exited the farthest stall several times, looking earnestly at us but never approaching or speaking a word. Finally, after we had reached the end of our introductions, and after this third man entered his stall again, closing the door behind him, Mitko, as I knew him now, pointed toward him and gave me a look of great significance, saying, "Iska, he wants," and then making a lewd gesture, the meaning of which was clear. Both he and his companion, whom he referred to as Bratmi, and who hadn't spoken since I arrived, laughed at this, looking at me as if to include me in the joke, though, of course, I was as much an object of their ridicule as the man listening to them from inside.